from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Meg Keane was planning her wedding, and it was starting to drive her nuts. And then something put her over the top. It was an ad for bargain wedding invitations that cost $3,000. So Meg started a blog. At first, it was to restore her own sanity, but it seemed to strike a chord with others. And so in this next hour of Forum, Meg Keane and fellow wedding blogger Catherine Stork join us to talk about the state of the American wedding. What's the best wedding you've ever been to? The worst? We'll open up our phone lines and talk about the state of the American wedding, our oh-so-June-ish topic, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. You probably know that June is the most popular month to get married, but did you know that the number of weddings in the United States actually peaked back in 1984 at 2.5 million and has declined ever since, leveling off at about 2.1 last year? Weddings are hugely important life events, but as such, they're also capable of inducing an equally huge amount of stress. The average American wedding now costs $26,000. But you can nearly double that if you live in San Francisco, triple it if you live in Manhattan. So on this June morning, the state of the American wedding is our topic. How do you actually make it what it should be about, you and the person you love? How do you make sure the wedding reflects who you are and your values and not stress out over everything from flowers to photos? And we want to hear your best wedding stories as well. If you're married, what was the best thing about it? What one thing would you want to go back and change? What's the best wedding you've ever been to? The worst? We're open for wedding stories on this Friday morning in June. Joining us for this hour, Meg Keane. She's the author of A Practical Wedding, Creative Solutions for Planning a Beautiful, Affordable, and Meaningful Celebration, and the publisher and editor of the website apracticalwedding.com. Meg, good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us as well is Catherine Stork Grady. She is the founder and editor of snippetandink.com, another wedding blog. Catherine Stork Grady, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy to have you both here. Let's talk about your weddings. I think that's a good place to start. And what you found stressful about it, Meg Keane. I read your blog entry, your early one, where you talked about you just one day went over the top when you found an ad for a bargain wedding invitations for the mere price of $3,000.
Sadly, that day was, I think, day seven. We'd maybe been engaged for a week. Wedding blogs were really new then, and I started diving in perhaps a little too voraciously. And I was really working on trying to find a way to throw a wedding that fit our values and fit our budget. You mentioned wedding budgets in the San Francisco Bay Area. And while we were spending less than the American average, that meant we were spending about half of the average in the San Francisco Bay Area. So both my husband and I had produced theater and produced events on a shoestring in New York for 5 years. And we thought we really had it in the bag. And it turned out we did not have it in the bag.
What was it that, I mean, if you think you know why you're getting married, presumably, and you think you know what's important to you, what is it that sort of pushes you out of that?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. First of all, we have this cultural idea that weddings are about the couple, and it's really important that the wedding stays focused on why you're getting married, on the fact that it's two people and you love each other and you're forming a new family. But weddings are also about the family, and in a way that I think you don't necessarily realize until suddenly you're the one who's about to walk down the aisle. And they're about forming a new family, and they're also about combining two existing families. And that can be difficult. And I think it's also difficult for your parents because they know in a way that you don't that in some ways things are never going to be exactly the same again, that you are, while you're still going to stay their son or their daughter, your primary allegiance is going to be to your new family in a way that you don't really understand until you go through it. So you have mothers that are maybe crying a little bit or freaking out a little bit, or maybe freaking out about the flowers when really they're just sad that because they feel like they're losing a relationship with their kid. And then you have this huge wedding industry now that didn't exist when our parents got married that's putting enormous pressure to, you know, buy things like $3,000 budget wedding invitations.
So is Catherine Sorcarady part of it just dealing with this question of expectation? Mm-hmm. I mean, is that where this really can go off the rails in a big hurry?
Absolutely. I think for me, one of the things that allowed me to really enjoy my own wedding was letting go of my expectations for that day. And that meant I've been blogging about weddings for 4.5 years, and I started blogging about weddings before I was engaged. So I have this constant input of wedding images and ideas, and it was really overwhelming. And it got to a place where I just sort of had to let go, or I knew I was going to go over the cliff. And I actually talked to Meg about, you know, how can I enjoy my wedding day? Like, how can I go in there and really get the most out of it and have that experience? And she said, you might not feel the way you think you're going to feel. So just let go of expecting anything, how you're going to feel, how it's going to look, how the cake is going to taste, any those kinds of things. Just let the day be what it is.
And is that then the first thing to make sure you focus on is not all that stuff, all the visuals of what a wedding is, what the cake is going to look like, what the decorations are going to look like, that it's too easy to get focused on the appearance of it all as opposed to sort of what's going on inside of you, Meg?
Yeah, I say a lot. My line is sort of that you're going to remember how your wedding feels. You're not going to remember how your wedding looks. And if you end up hiring a photographer who you like and trust, not that you have to hire a photographer, you know, trust me, they're going to make it look prettier than it was anyway. That's their job.
That's their job.
So you might as well relax. But what you're going to remember is how it feels. And I don't think there's enough focus on that. And I also think that culturally we focus on how it's going to look when we're planning the wedding. And there's not enough focus on just the enjoyment of it. And I don't mean enjoyment in the sense that you should make your wedding a show or you need to have magicians or flamenco dancers or all this crazy stuff that you're hearing these days. I mean, if you want flamenco dancers, fine, but your guests are not expecting that. But just sort of the basics of taking care of your guests, making sure that they know what's happening next, especially if it's non-traditional. Guests will go with a whole lot if you sort of guide them and feed them.
Meg Keane joining us this hour along with Catherine Sorcarady. They're both wedding bloggers. Meg Keane's is practicalwedding.com. Catherine's is snippetandink.com. And we're going to open up our phone lines early so that you can phone in with your questions and concerns, your best wedding stories. What was the best wedding you ever went to? What was the worst? What about your own wedding is special to you? What is it about it that you would change? If you're about to get married, what is it that's driving you nuts at the moment? We want to open up our lines and have you join us as we talk about this during this month of June, the most popular month to get married. Our number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. You can also post your question, thought, concern, or anxiety on our Facebook page or on our website. 866-733-6786 is the number if you'd like to join our conversation. So where do you start if you're thinking about getting married? Do you really want to start with your vows, Meg Keane? Is that sort of the basic starting point that you think first about? All right, well, why am I doing this? And what is it that I really want to commit to on this day?
I think that that's the right idea, though you don't necessarily need to start with your vows. I know for us, we ended up doing traditional vows because we decided that the important part about marriage for us was actually tying ourselves to this institution that had supported our family for generations. So starting with our vows would have been fairly boring and in Hebrew. But I think there's this idea that I talked about actually when Catherine was getting married. I talked to her about this idea of the wedding mission statement, where you just sort of write a sentence together about what your general takeaways are. And if you start with that at the very beginning.
Give me an example. I mean, when I think of mission statements, I think of like what the mission of KQED is or something like that. It sounds very official, but I think I get it. But tell me what it would be.
So I think our wedding mission statement was that we wanted to have the people that we loved most there, we wanted to have a good party and we wanted to have a religious service. And that sounds really basic. But as we moved into the wedding planning process, it allowed us to keep coming back to it because, you know, especially with money issues, it gets very stressful. So I would have these moments where I would say to my husband, we should just elope, or we should just have 20 people, or we should just have, you know, 50 people in our backyard. And he would always guide me back and say, we said that the most important thing was having the people we loved most around us. And, you know, there are 70 people in my family alone. So,
yeah, such a great point. I mean, because if the most important thing to you is, I just want to have fun, or I want to be able to dance or whatever, to remember that, right, Catherine?
Exactly. I think one of the things about the mission statement idea, or the wedding manifesto, or, you know, that thinking about what do you want that experience to be like also, it's really unlikely that, well, I don't know. For me, my mission statement didn't have anything in there about how it was going to look. You know, it was about celebrating this really important day with our friends and family there to witness it.
Our phone lines are already full. Let's get started with our callers. Chris in Sonoma joins us first. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, guys.
You know, I am shocked and so pleased that the first person who would call in is a guy. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes.
So I got to turn my radio now. There we go. So 20 years ago, I decided that the gal that I was living with was the gal that I should continue living with for the rest of my life. But the whole concept of paying thousands of dollars for a wedding and putting everybody through all the hassle of that just was really discouraging. So my wife and I have decided we would get married in our backyard, arranged with the mayor of our local town to perform it, told him, told our landlady, told my wife's best friend, who was a pastry chef, told our parents so they could be there, then just put the invite out to all our close friends that we were having a Memorial Day party. And a few people said they had other things to do. We really said they should cancel those other things. So most everybody showed up. A couple didn't make it. But I think people figured we'd been living together long enough that they figured we were going to get engaged at that party. So we did. We got engaged, and I said, we're going to get married. Everybody clapped and said, we're going to get married right now. And the mayor came out, and we were barefoot, big azalea bush in the back, gave a housemate a camera. Before he knew that was going down, just said, hey, this is going to be a good day. Just take some pictures. Got a great wedding album out of the whole thing. 6 months later, my wife's parents were able to then throw a party kind of at their convenience at their apartment in the city. This is all in New York, too, so you know, a wedding would have just been over the top. And it was just great. I mean, it was
great
our
story.
Day. People just couldn't believe it. Just perfect. The one Saturday, it didn't rain all summer in New York that week, too.
Great story, Chris. Thanks. Thanks for getting us started this morning. What comes to mind to you with that story, Meg and Catherine? I've never heard of a surprise wedding. Great idea. What other kinds of things does that prompt you to the people ought to consider?
For me, the thing that brings to mind is it's actually one of the things that I tried to remember when I was planning, which was, how would you think about your wedding if you knew there weren't going to be any pictures? That's how how would you think about it differently? What choices would you make if you knew there weren't going to be any pictures? And they had a friend take their pictures, but they didn't hire a professional photographer. And I think you're going to think about it differently. You're not going to be so focused on how everything looks. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you focus on how it looks for your guests and for yourself on that day, but not how it's going to look for your pictures. And I think it is kind of liberating, you know, to think about it that way.
Really interesting point to imagine it that way. So again, you're thinking about more about what matters as opposed to what things look like. Mm-hmm. What about this element of surprise? Have you heard other variations on that,
Meg? Yeah, there was a surprise wedding that went sort of viral on the internet, at least on our portion of the internet, a couple years ago, where the bride was super stressed out. And her mom, I think, said, why don't we just throw it next week? So they invited everybody to an engagement party, and they got married at the engagement party. And it apparently was a wonderful experience. And the people that said they couldn't come, they called and said, no, seriously, you have to be there. So I think there's an element of, if you can't do it fast, it's probably not important.
Mm. Join us at 866-733-6786 if you had a surprise wedding or other thoughts on how you can keep weddings focused on what they ought to be about. We'd love to hear your suggestions. Let's hear next from Ingrid in Oakland. Ingrid, go ahead.
Hi, this goes on a surprise tangent that I had a huge Mexican-Irish Catholic wedding with so much planning, and yet the best thing about our wedding was the thing we totally didn't plan. We were living in San Francisco, and we were doing the paperwork in City Hall, and we said, this is in 2000 in the era of our charismatic mayor, Willie Brown. We said, let's invite Willie Brown to our wedding. He regretted, and it said, Willie, and it had his middle initial Brown, and my husband said, he's always saying to call him up and invite him to the wedding. You're very persuasive. So it was midnight at our wedding in the Mark Hopkins. Everybody's dancing, having a great time. Willie Brown walked into the ballroom. I didn't know him at all. And he got up, and everyone was so thrilled. And it was just really a fun party with family and dancing. And Willie Brown coming for our friends who are coming from all over the country was the icing on the cake. And it was not at all planned in any way. And it was just a delightful surprise. And to this day, everyone talks about how the mayor came to their wedding in San Francisco. So Ingrid, you never know.
Right. Ingrid, thanks. I guess also a reminder to not be afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like I can't top that story.
No.
Ingrid, thanks for joining us. Next up is Toby. Toby, go ahead.
Hi. I had a sort of two-pronged comment. One is I'm getting married in 2 weeks in Palo Alto, and I live in San Francisco. And one is to keep the wedding, economical, we chose to get the Casa Indian food truck from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot less than traditional catering, and the kitchen is self-contained, huh. You know, and mm-hmm. they're going to arrive and then see the guests and then leave. So that's one thing that we sort of figured out that it's also trendy at the moment, as I'm sure you know. Food trucks are pretty cool. And then number two, I'm marrying a woman, and, I think the marriage equality piece is something that we can't forget. It's even the most well-meaning straight friends have asked me, so what's the deal with marriage right now? Can you guys even get married? And I sometimes just want to scream, yes, we are getting married in our own terms. You know, until the state catches up with us in terms of the legal piece, we don't want to be robbed of the language of marriage. So yeah. We're saying we're getting married, you know, even though it's not quite legal on paper. We're doing domestic partnership. But there's something about that language, and I'm sure the bloggers would agree, that, you know, we have so many cultural associations with marriage and wedding. And it's not quite the same to say we're having a,
you're having a domestic ceremony. Partnership ceremony. Yeah. Toby, thanks.
It sounds so sterile. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. That brings up a couple of three actually interesting trend questions that I'd like to ask you both about. But let's start with the gay marriage question and how that's influencing, or what kind of effect, I guess, that's having on the way in which weddings take place.
Go ahead.
Yeah. That's a huge issue for me. We're actually doing Pride Week on the blog next week to coincide with San Francisco Pride because we've realized that there's something very important about having a week where we only have LGBTQ writers and we only have gay weddings on the site. And one of our writers said something very similar to what the caller said in that she said everyone kept asking them, was it legal? Was it legal? And she said, you know, I've never gone to a straight wedding where I asked them, you know, have you already signed your civil paperwork? And I don't think that's appropriate. And for me, I know that was the hands down hardest moment of our wedding. We were married by two lesbian rabbi and a rabbinical student, and they were in charge of, you know, having us sign the civil paperwork. And I almost broke down because these were two happily married women in our faith community, and we had access to something that they didn't.
And on that question also about language, Toby was making the point, we don't want to be deprived of that language. And that's an interesting thing to think about, too. It goes along in the sense with what you were saying earlier, Catherine, about don't think about visual. Think about words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We actually, for our wedding, we went to City Hall the day before our church wedding because for us, we wanted to keep those two things separate. And I think that was sort of our very small way of honoring the fact that, you know, they don't necessarily, they aren't necessarily the same thing, you know. Our civil ceremony, that's what we called it. And then we had our wedding and our marriage the next day at the church.
And one trumped the other?
I mean, they were both really special. I don't think you can say that, you know, being able to be legally married is really important.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, having everybody there for us to celebrate us. I mean, that really, the church wedding was, that's our wedding. That's when we think of as our anniversary.
Toby, thanks for the call. I want to get back, but I'm going to take another call first to some, I'd like to hear from both of you on interesting wedding trends. I didn't know about the food truck trend, but let's hear next from a caterer who wants to join in the conversation. Christina in Berkeley, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to urge the bride and groom to always actually eat food. Well, so often people are shoving champagne in their hands and they're so caught up in making sure everyone else is having a good time and making sure that they get all the photos taken and all of that, that they don't actually have any time to eat. And it really can kind of wreak havoc with your mood and your kind of your well-being for the evening.
Great point. Thanks, Christina. Remember to eat.
Yes, it's important.
It is important.
Christina, thanks for the call. Let's stay with eating then for a moment. Other interesting food trends. Comment, if you would, on the food truck question. But what other interesting trends are you seeing that are making weddings a little bit different? Catherine?
I love the food truck trend. I think it kind of reminds me of the signature cocktail that now is like at every wedding, but which originally started as like a budget-friendly way to have a bar. And then became cool and everybody does it. And I think food trucks are kind of that way. It's a really fun way to keep, you know, to not break the bank. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of that, even at weddings where people maybe could afford a lot more.
McKean?
Yeah. We see a lot of food trucks and a lot of, you know, people that also allows you to host weddings in really non-traditional locations. Like I highlight in my book someone who got married at a nightclub in San Francisco and they just had a food truck roll out outside. And it allowed them to keep their budget to, I think, around $15,000, which is on the low end for the city, certainly, though it's still a lot of money. So that and then local and organic. I mean, the food trends in weddings are the same as the food trends in the Bay Area.
We have to take a break in just a moment, but a moment more on the money question. We'll talk more about this when we come back. You say on your blog that you don't want to focus on how much people spend. You want to focus on how people spend it.
Yeah, I think that's really important. There's a lot of sort of comparison that goes on, and I think it can take you to a really bad place where you say, I'm going to spend $10,000 on my wedding, and then you realize you spent $12,000 and you have a, you know, psychological meltdown. And what I sort of learned is that after the contracts are signed and it's all done, as long as it's not debt, there comes a point where it's water under the bridge. You're married, the money's gone, you're moving forward. But I think how we spend the money is really important, both because it's one of the largest chunks of money you're probably ever going to spend other than on a house, and you're spreading that money
around. Is that right? I guess that would be right. Yeah, well, that and maybe
cars,
your child's education.
In your child's education. But it's one of the few times where you're going to make choices where the money goes. You know, if your kid goes to NYU, you're just going to write that check to the bursar. You know, there's not a lot of wiggle room on that. So it gives you a chance to support businesses and artists that you care about. So I think that becomes more important in some ways than, you know, you can buy sort of a generic big box wedding dress that was made in China for $100, or you can support an artist for $500. And sometimes that $500 ends up being important.
Meg Keane, her wedding site is Affordable Wedding. Catherine Stork joins us as well. Her blog is called snippetandink.com. When we come back, we'll take your questions. Here's some of what we're going to be talking about. Best wedding someone ever went to was a potluck wedding. We'll talk about that. Also, my brother's wedding was the best Kathy ever went to. We'll talk about what that experience was. Lots of other things coming in about money, about how you manage things, about whether or not how you choose your efficient, where you pick your place. We'll talk about vendors and venues and all the rest on Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Weddings in this month of June is the topic this morning. By the way, June is the most popular month. January, probably not surprisingly, is the least popular month to get married. Meg Keane is one of our guests. She's the publisher and executive editor of the website apracticalwedding.com and the author of A Practical Wedding, Creative Solutions for Planning a Beautiful, Affordable, and Meaningful Celebration. Catherine Stork Grady is with us as well. She is the founder and editor of another wedding blog called snippetandink.com. Your calls and comments and stories are welcome this hour at 866-733-6786. Email us at submit form at kqed.org. You can also post your wedding questions and comments on KQED Forum's Facebook page. Lots of comments coming in. Weddings are a lot less stressful when you focus on the big picture, the marriage. If you and your partner surround yourself with people who agree to focus on the same thing, everything will be lovely and things won't matter. Here's a question. In your experiences and with people you've dealt with, do you think there's a connection between the kind of wedding you have and the kind of marriage you have? I mean, is it important as a sort of starting point for actually the next, hopefully, 50 years that follow?
So I actually write about that a lot on the site, and we recently sort of had a debate. I think it depends on the person. For me, it was important, and for me, there are people who say, oh, we were married in our hearts before we were married. We did not feel that way, particularly since we had a religious Jewish service. So there's sort of this legal aspect in the Jewish ceremony where you sign a legal document. And for us, something changed for both of us. We'd been together 5 years, but things were different in a good way afterwards. But also, I think for us, there was this sort of moment in the sun that we can now look back to, because, you know, the bottom line is, as my mom always says, forget good days and bad days. Your marriage will have good years and bad years, right? So mm-hmm. when you're in a rough period, having this moment in the sun that you can look back on for us has been really important. And then there's other people who say it matters less. And I think what doesn't matter is the kind of wedding you have, right? Choosing to get married on the beach or choosing to get married at City Hall is not going to somehow make your wedding, your marriage more carefree or more legal. But I think that act of ritually tying yourself to somebody with your loved ones around possibly is can be really important.
Let's hear from our callers again. Tracy in San Francisco is up next. Tracy, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a couples therapist in San Francisco. And so I see couples premaritally and I see couples when they're struggling. And I think that what you just said was so potent. But I really get that there's so many pulls culturally to focus on the ceremony and maybe not quite know how important it is to really be connecting with this other human being. And, you know, I've been to many weddings where the couple has a hard time making eye contact at the altar. Right? And to really be able to focus on what that connection is and what that rite of passage is, I agree with what your guest just said about not the kind of wedding, but it's about what it is that you're doing through the wedding. And when couples come in to see me and they're arguing over the budget or the officiant or the location, I get curious with them about what other things might actually be going on that could pertain to their connection.
Yeah, Tracy, thank you. Thanks for that. And so in some ways, Catherine Sark Grady, it provides an interesting lens to look at sort of what's important to you and to the couple that you're about to be joined with.
Absolutely. I think that, like the caller just said, I think weddings can they provide a lot of distraction from what's actually going on. And it's easier to worry about flowers than it is to worry about, you know, like, oh, my gosh, this is the person I'm going to be with forever. Mm-hmm. You know, like flowers are so much easier to spend your energy on. And I think so. And weddings provide so many things like that that you can focus on and get distracted by.
I was just looking at some wedding sites earlier this morning, and I found one about that's all about sort of what's in a way kind of what's not important. It was called the Ritzy Ranch Wedding. A 200-year-old barn, complete with long exposed wood tables, large chandeliers, and ambient lighting. Lace-wrapped bouquets of wild roses, lilies of the valley, Queen Anne's lace, and gardenias. Delicate wild game like juniper-spiced venison, cider-braised pheasant, and Old West, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's all about stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's been some kickback even within the wedding industry recently over the idea that, you know, there are wedding blogs out there and wedding blogs are sort of the place that weddings are getting published these days that ask for no pictures of people.
I had a photographer tell me that. A photographer had submitted a wedding to me and said, I submitted this somewhere else, and the blogger said, please don't send any more pictures of people, you know. And
just the stuff.
Just the stuff.
All right. Tammy in Berkeley is next. Tammy, go ahead.
Hi. I work as a wedding photographer and as a pastor, so I officiate weddings.
Two for one.
Times photograph them, exactly.
And sometimes the most successful weddings that I've seen are ones where the couple, whether they're religious or not, can see the wedding as a ritual. Mm-hmm. I think rituals from birthdays to graduations to funerals sort of mark the passage of time in our lives. And there are pieces of the aesthetics to weddings that I think are really important. Mm-hmm. Images and art and music, mm-hmm, and poetry are really critical. And so between aesthetics and time, I mean, like being able to actually spend time with your guests and not be so focused on the minutiae of the wedding have been, I think, the most critical pieces to me in seeing couples really value their wedding day as a ritual.
Mm-hmm. Tammy, great point. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that as much as we're saying, you know, you remember the feeling, we're human beings, so we experience the world through the particular, and there are going to be objects that are important, right? My wedding dress is like this sort of ritual garment for me, not even necessarily in a religious sense, but that's this object that helps bring me back. Our ketubah is this object that helps bring me back. So I think identifying for yourself what those objects might be and then allowing yourself to focus on them can be really helpful because it allows you to process that huge experience that you're having in a physical way.
And some of those old sayings probably have value too, the old something borrowed, or I don't even remember the rest of it, but incorporating things that are important parts of your own family history, perhaps. Catherine?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most special and sort of unexpected things, objects that was a part of my wedding, were the earrings that I wore. I had been, you know, that one of those little details you get caught up on. I'd been searching high and low for the perfect earrings. And I was looking through some of my own that I already had. And I had a pair of little diamond studs that were made from my grandmother's watch. The wristband of my grandmother's watch. And my godmother, who makes jewelry, took those two diamond studs and added a drop pearl to them because she makes jewelry. And that was her gift to me. And it was this really special object from my wedding.
Comments coming in on our Facebook page. We surprised our friends by inviting them to a tiki party and then getting married in front of them. So another surprise wedding. Bruce writes in, best wedding I've been to was a campout. The natural setting makes for a beautiful backdrop for the ceremony. Sometimes you can just bring your own tent or do them in rustic cabins. Another best wedding comment. The best thing about our wedding was having friends and family from across the country and around the world in one spot for 2 days. We were married last August, and many of our friends from all over stayed connected with each other because of that event. Another comment. I've been married for 13 years. We got married in the courthouse. All our parents and siblings were there, and we had a lovely lunch afterwards. We never regretted saving thousands of dollars and incredible stress. Back to our calls. Jeff in Los Gatos. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that in this day and age, it seems like so many kids want to save money towards their wedding. And in doing so, unfortunately, what they've done is excluded a lot of family members by saying, well, gosh, maybe they're not that close to us, or let's just not invite them, because that way we can save that extra change that gets thrown into the wedding reception and so on. So it's a little disconcerting on my part. I've seen a couple different weddings happen, one that's going to happen sometime in September, and my own brother is not invited to the wedding, and it's my soon-to-be daughter-in-law, and it's kind of like, ugh. And it really sets a really bad tone for what might come in the future. So I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks. Meg?
There's this sort of like rule that you hear all the time that if you're trying to save money, and you know almost everyone's trying to save money because the price of weddings is now astronomical, the first thing you should do is cut your guest list. And I think it's fairly horrible advice, and it's usually followed by so you can afford X, right? Not having people you love there so you have really nice photographs, for example, is for most people not a great trade-off. I mean, if you're eloping, if you're having a small wedding, if you're doing that intentionally, that's great, and that's a different situation. But if you feel like you need to have more people, you know, that's not a great way to go about it.
So how would you manage the trade-off? If you want to be inclusive, but you really are on limited means, where's the comeback on that so that you can meet what is your bottom line?
I think about, instead of thinking about what kind of wedding do I, you know, what kind of food do I want, and then how many people can I afford to feed that much food, go the other way and say, who needs to be at my wedding? Mm-hmm. Who should be on my guest list? And then figure out what can I afford to feed them? I think that's the way to think about it. And even if that's, you know, cake and punch, then everybody gets to be there, and that's still a celebration.
What about the trend of sort of do-it-yourself, DIY weddings, which on the surface sound like a way to sort of be economical, but also can kind of be Martha Stewart on steroids, right?
Yeah, there's sort of this issue where DIY weddings have become really, really popular, and the aesthetic has become really popular, and a lot of what you see presented as a DIY wedding someone did it themselves, but it was, you know, a professional team of artists. So DIY weddings can be certainly as expensive as an aesthetic choice. So I think you need to be careful. And if you DIY, choose what you're DIYing. We did our flowers, which was a huge project, saved money that way. But that meant that we couldn't DIY, you know, everything else. So,
and like anything else, it probably is something where you shouldn't like be hard on yourself if you actually do buy a cake or something.
Exactly.
I mean, you can't get out of hand with sort of enforcing that as some sort of, or it'll just create more stress.
There's like a pressure, I think, to be a DIY bride, mm-hmm. sort of, that I think is an interesting new, it's like this pressure to spend a certain amount or not,
right.
and then this pressure to create a certain amount of stuff up for your wedding.
Margot is up next. Margot, go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to tell you that my brother's wedding was the best wedding I ever went to, besides my own, of course. He rented a children's camp for a week, and every day there were different sporting activities, and every night there was a different kind of dance band. It was the most extraordinary thing. But the main thing I wanted to say is I think second weddings are a special opportunity to focus on the relationship. My husband of 6 months proposed to me at Subway, eat fresh, get engaged. We discovered that you could have a gift registry on a cruise ship, even if you don't get married by the cruise ship, and the money is fungible. So if everyone gives you money, they give you what you don't spend back. So we got married for $350 in the Virgin Islands, and the extra money paid for my dress. So we ended up with a free second wedding. And then we had a huge bon retour party when we got back that was catered by Subway.
Margo, thanks. Second weddings, that's an interesting thing we haven't touched on yet. What different issues come up on your blogs with people who are getting married for a second time or are getting married somewhat later in life? Catherine?
You know what? It's interesting. So whenever I have a wedding submitted to me, I ask the couple to answer some questions for me about so I can tell their story. And I cannot think of one who has at least disclosed to me that it was their second wedding.
We read a lot about second weddings. I think there's a lot of pressure to sort of not go public, which is interesting because we sort of accepted divorce culturally, and we seem to have somehow not accepted second weddings, which are clearly the better half of the duo. So I think there's this idea that you shouldn't celebrate or you shouldn't be in public because it didn't work out last time. And I've had a lot of people who had second weddings say things to me like, it's not my second wedding, it's my last wedding, or this time I'm getting it right. And sometimes, you know, they got it right the first time. It just, you know, time happens. But I think that there is still a need to make a public commitment. And often with a second wedding, there's kids involved and there's families involved. And to teach your kids that you're somehow hiding this under the rug, that it's not acceptable to be in public, I think is a really damaging message.
So the same questions apply in terms of what matters, what's important, but it's more complex, more layered. There are more things to sort of sort out and probably important to sort out.
And I think there's more shame that you're dealing with. I think all brides in particular, because women somehow get the public brunt in these moments, that have a lot of shame that they're dealing with. But second brides, it's big.
Kaya, hope I'm saying that right, in Sacramento on DIY weddings. Kaya, go ahead.
Hi. My husband and I got married when we calculated it by the end for under $6,000. It was a beautiful wedding, and everybody said, a lot of people said it was the best wedding they had ever been to. And we basically did as much budget as we could and got as many people to participate and contribute. So friends who had some professional skill, for example, a friend who's a professional photographer, we just paid his travel expenses and he did beautiful photographs. A friend who's a wine collector contributed the wine. A friend who wanted to gift some aspect of the wedding bought amazing cupcakes. We did all the cooking ourselves for 80 people. My mom and, you know, kind of team women in the kitchen. My mom grew flowers, which we clipped and then put in mason jars that were just sitting in her kitchen cabinets. A professional musician who's a friend of ours, we paid for his travel and he gifted us music for the reception. My sister's an actress, so she did my hair and makeup instead of hiring somebody to do it. And it was actually, you know, one of the best things about the wedding was spending 4 days with our friends and family getting ready.
Truly participatory. I mean, it was, and everyone was sort of engaged in this common mission, to come back to our mission statement. Kaya, thanks for the call. Kaya mentioned something about the women in the kitchen, and I'm curious about that, because though we have heard from a couple of guys, and I'm glad about that, this does seem to be largely a women's venture. I mean, do you get much traffic on your websites from guys calling in saying, I'm concerned about the flowers?
I have male readers, and they don't leave comments. I have a lot of...
I mean, are they generally sort of AWOL from this process?
No, I don't think so at all. And for my partner and I, you know, it was really important that my husband was as much on the team as I was. But no one was asking him, and everyone was asking me how the wedding planning was going. So I think there's a cultural assumption that men are less involved if you're marrying a man. And there's also sort of – he was involved, but he wasn't going to read wedding blogs. You know, he was involved, but he wasn't calling up his mom to talk about it. So he had a sort of different kind of emotional involvement, but he was still very involved.
Yeah, I think – For us, my husband was, you know, he cared. The things that he cared about were things like, I think the things that really mattered, you know, like the ceremony and the content of our ceremony and the band that we chose and would our guests enjoy the band and the food that we served. He came to the tasting and cared about that. So he really cared a lot about the experience of it. I think in our relationship, I care more about like aesthetics, like how our house looks and stuff. So it would make sense that I would be the one who cares more about those things in our wedding too.
Let me ask the sort of flip side of that question, whether or not it's possible to be a sort of strong, sassy feminist and deal with all of this. I mean, I've had a number of younger women say to me, God, I never thought I'd be like this, that I would turn into the, you know, classic bridezilla. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I write extensively about feminism and weddings and marriage, and certainly consider myself a you know, very vocal public feminist. And I think that while marriage has a troubling history for women, part of tradition is actually apparently the root word of the word tradition means to hand off or to hand over, right? So there's traditions that are being passed from hand to hand, and it's up to us, particularly as feminists, to leave our daughters something better than what we were given, and hopefully improve that with each generation.
Back to our calls. Lauren joins us next. Lauren, go ahead, please.
Hi, Meg and Catherine. It's great to hear you guys on the air. I read your blogs every day, sometimes multiple times. I was wondering if you could speak to the idea that your wedding day is supposed to be the best day of your life. I got married last year without a hitch in more ways than one. Everything went pretty smoothly, but I also felt like I didn't really get married at my wedding. In the blogosphere, I think there's a lot of talk about the idea of transcendence, and I was wondering if you could speak to the idea that, you know, maybe you don't experience that at your wedding, and maybe it's not the sort of moment in the sun, and maybe that's okay.
Lauren, thanks.
I think that's absolutely okay, and I think that that speaks to this idea of you might not feel the way that you think you should feel or are going to feel on your wedding day, and that's okay. And, I think it's okay. There are brides who hated their wedding, and that happens, and that's okay too. I think blogs and magazines really promote this idea of perfection. I call it the perfection myth, because we get to choose what photos we show and what stories we tell, and we get to make it look and sound perfect. And so that adds to this idea that your wedding should be the best day of your life. And I think if it is the best day of your life, I don't know, that's kind of a bummer. You got a whole lot more life to go.
Here's an interesting comment from Todd. I don't know if I'm cynical or just male, and I do wonder if 90% of men out there are rolling their eyes right now. But 26 years ago, my in-laws budgeted $3,000 for a wedding hastily planned after my dad was diagnosed with cancer. 7 years ago, my wife and I separated, eventually spending over $150,000 in legal fees to end the marriage. Can't help but wonder if my ex and I had spent as much time and energy on our relationship as on the wedding, maybe we'd still be married. Your wedding should be wonderful. Just don't end your efforts there. Thanks. Thanks, Todd, for writing that in. Amy in Berkeley. Amy, go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to share a couple things. My husband and I also had a backyard wedding, and one of the things that I just thought of that's so wonderful about that is we still live in the same house, and it's really incredible sometimes to go sit in the actual spot where we really got married. So a big plug for backyard weddings. The other thing is our minister, who was one of our best friends who did it for us, suggested that right after the ceremony, we go sit alone in our bedroom and just take a few minutes for the two of us to savor the whole experience. And for us, that the whole wedding was wonderful, but that was also a really super special moment.
Amy, thanks for bringing that up. I've heard of that before, of people just immediately after the ceremony, just giving themselves a little time before, you know, the champagne gets popped. Meg?
It's actually a Jewish tradition. It's mandated. It's I always mangle the pronunciation, but the Yehud, and it's one of the three mandated parts of a Jewish wedding. It's the signing the ketubah, exchanging something of value, and the moment alone, which was traditionally consummation. And for us, also, it was the most important part of the day. It was, we didn't have photographers. In keeping with Jewish tradition, we had my husband's oldest friend and his brother guarding the door, which is symbolic of that meant that they now have a responsibility to guard our marriage and our relationship. And just those moments of connecting and not being in public are certainly the ones that I will look back on until I am old and gray.
Catherine?
Yeah, I also think it really sets the tone for you to be present through that really crazy day. You know, it's like you get, it gives you time to absorb what's just happened, to, that you've just given, you know, this promise to each other in front of the people who love you. And then you're going to go celebrate. And I think it really kind of gives you a chance to pause and breathe and go into the celebration mindfully and, you know, present.
Amy and Lou write in the same thing. My husband and I had a backyard wedding. Our best friend served as minister and suggested that we just take a few minutes right after the ceremony to sit alone and let that experience resonate. And it is still one of our most cherished moments 24 years later. Deborah writes in, at our Mexican-Irish wedding, we created an altar with photos of loved ones who have passed. First, my husband was afraid he'd be sad to see his mom's face, but he realized before the day that it would be a good thing. It was wonderful. And all of our guests commented on how meaningful this was and how it touched us, focusing on what really matters. Kate, the best piece of advice I can give, don't worry about the details. Don't scour the earth for the most perfect dress. Don't listen to every band and DJ. Hire one who's reliable and whose music you'll like. Don't taste test for 3 months. The most important details are not the clothes you wear or the food you serve, but the smiles on your faces. My husband and I also had a backyard wedding. Another person writes, Beth writes in, it's so sad to see more effort being put into the wedding day and then the letdown when the couples realize what marriage requires and end up getting divorced. We eloped. And when my husband died, we had been married 38 years. Marriage was about us, not about others. Meg?
Yeah, I kept hearing about wedding day depression, and I will say our wedding was really joyful, but it was certainly not the best day of my life. But I think our honeymoon, which marked, you know, the start of our marriage, I will look back on it as two of the best weeks of our life. And I came back from our honeymoon just, you know, over the moon and the happiest I'd probably ever been, because it was starting the marriage. And that marriage has, you know, in the past 3 years already been so important to us, even though we've been together more than 7. So I think that it needs to be the beginning of something big, not the be-all, end-all.
What about dealing with real differences, whether those be differences in income between partners, difference in race, difference in ethnicities? Someone writes in, I'm Indian, she's Korean. In our respective cultures, weddings are not always necessary. How do you deal with really deep and important differences, respect them, but still somehow figure out a way to pull this all off, Catherine?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I don't know. I think a wedding is a really great opportunity to start that conversation, because that's something that you're going to have to think about in other areas of your life together and your marriage. And a wedding provides a chance to really start that conversation and to sit down and say, how are we going to respect each other and each other's families and traditions while still staying true to our own?
We're interfaith. I converted, so we dealt with this and deal with it every day. It doesn't go away. And I think that wedding planning is often hard for a reason, and that reason has nothing to do with the flowers. It's hard because if you're doing your job, you're really starting to delve into these issues. And it's easy to think that once you figure out how you're going to manage, you know, two cultures or two sets of incomes or two sets of expectations in the wedding day, you figured it out. But trust me, it's going to go on for the rest of your marriage.
We just have a moment left. It's June. There will be people getting married this very weekend. Best short advice, Catherine Stork Grady.
Just let go. Just wake up on that day and just anything that you've been worrying about up until that day, just let it go and just be there.
And protect your own experience. There's only 12 hours that you're going to be a bride or a groom. And during that 12 hours, your job is to be as present as you possibly can. If other people bring problems or drama to the table, it's the one chance in your life where you get to look at it, acknowledge it, and then walk away.
Meg Keane, her website is practicalwedding.com. Catherine Stork Grady's website is snippetandink.com. Thanks both very much. Really appreciate your being here today. And you can post your wedding questions and comments and stories now on the KQED Forum Facebook page. If you go to our website, you can also see the spectacular wedding photographs of two of our producers, Vinnie Tong's wedding and Judy Campbell's. Those are worth a visit in and of themselves. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Amanda Supai, and Vinnie Tong. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our interns are Asal Asanampur, Jessica Chung, Emily Holtzman, Shelby Pope, Joshua Rafeman, with help this week from Max Root. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Look to night.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.